You're listening to the UFO Radio Network, and this is the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show with your host, Andrew Carrington Hitchcock.
Hello, everybody, and I'm delighted today to welcome back my good friend, Deanna Spingola, and we've got a show coming for you today called Timeline of the Medical Industry. So, Deanna, are you with me?
I am, thank you.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. Now, folks, as you know, I pre-record my Saturday shows, and we're pre-recording this on March the 7th. But it's actually going out to you on March the 17th, which is a Saturday, and that is also the day that Deanna does her live three-hour show on Republic Broadcasting Network. And to listen live, you go to republicbroadcasting.org. Deanna, can you give the details of the times that you go out on Saturdays, please?
Yes. My program is from 3 to 6 p.m., and that's Central Standard Time. And anyway, I hope that people will join me and join the chat room, because there's always a lively discussion there. And anyway, I've been doing it since 2010. Had a radio program since 2010.
Yes.
With Republic.
Excellent. And so that would be 4 p.m. Eastern, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Excellent. So, folks, this show is 10 a.m. Eastern to 11 a.m. Eastern, so give yourself a five-hour break, and then go and listen to Deanna's show so you can get some things done on your Saturday, and then go and listen to Deanna's show. However, if you are not free at that time to listen to it, then Deanna has a great individual who's been archiving her shows for many, many years on their own site, and the site is Spingola Speaks. Is that .com?
Yes, .net.
I thought it was .net. I was about to say the other one. So SpingolaSpeaks.net. And this guy gets the shows up pretty soon after their broadcast. But if you leave it till the Sunday, just to be sure, and then just go to SpingolaSpeaks.net. Actually, why don't you go to SpingolaSpeaks.net now and have a look at all the previous shows that Deanna's done. And you've got a wealth of guests that she's had on, lots of different shows, as she said, going right back to 2010. So you know, that's an excellent resource for you, and they're all free to download, so please check that out. Now, Deanna, your website as well, what's that, please?
Spingola.com.
Excellent. And what sort of material have you got on there? If you had to describe what your website would be best used for, of course, you have your shows are archived on SpingolaSpeaks.net, so don't look for shows on Spingola.com. What could they find on Spingola.com?
I have written a number of articles, and they can find my articles there. And they will also find links to my other website, which is ScreeningSandyHook.net. And that is where I write articles pertaining to Sandy Hook. And also it pertains to the book that I wrote about that article, about that issue.
And also you've got your other books, The Ruling Elite, is that correct?
Yes, and those are all on my website at Spingola.com. And I actually sold out of my third book in that series yesterday, because I had I stock them, but I don't compete with Amazon, because Amazon can buy books much cheaper than I can do it. And so when I publish a book, then I get 75 of one, or I get a bunch of them, both the hardback and the paperback. And so I sold my last book. So it was kind of, well, it was nice, because I'm not a book stock. I don't want to have a warehouse.
I know what you mean. I mean, I live in a 500 square foot apartment, and I've got, you know, I don't stock any of the English language books anymore. When they got the ban last year, and Lulu got the ban, and I let the people know, I had about 40 of the Synagogue of Satan left, and I sold all of them in, 48 hours, I think they all went. And what I did, you see, is when I stocked them is I again would have to charge more than Amazon. I would offer them signed. I always felt guilty about having to charge them for a signature.
Right, I sign all of mine.
Yeah, that's it. So that's another thing, folks. If you want to sign books, that's go to Deanna. And
except they're gone. I don't have any more.
Oh, I thought you
the only book that I now have is the book on Sandy Hook. I have both paperback and hardback.
Oh, sorry. I thought you just meant it was the one book in the trilogy that sold out, but that was the last one of all.
All of the books in the trilogy are gone.
Right. Yeah, I know what you mean about space and all that. And then it's you'd have to take it to the post office. And I tend to take them as I sold them. So some days I'd be going in the post office almost every day and queuing up and stuff. And, but anyway, it was, that's very good news. And, let's jump into our subject today. It's timeline of the medical industry. So that sounds like a very wide topic. So can you let the audience know where we're going to go with this today, please, Deanna?
All righty. I've always been interested in medicine, and I believe in timelines, as you do, because your book is a timeline, and you can see exactly what happened, when it happened. And I think that is so important. It gives people kind of a roadmap of sorts that they can look and see the connection that one incident has with another. And so I decided when I wrote my book, Screening Sandy Hook, Causes and Consequences, that I would develop a timeline. But this timeline doesn't just deal with that. It goes clear back to 1847, and people can look at that timeline. There's a link to it from my website, Spingola.com, or Spingola.com/timeline_screening.html. But you go clear back to 1847, and on May 7th, they quote unquote, established the American Medical Association, which is a private, secretive organization of allopathic physicians. So we often think of allopathic medicine as something that's more recent, but no, it isn't. It started back in 1847. Now, just recently, I read a lot. I read every day. It's just something I've always done. I always take a book to bed with me. Now they're on my iPad. I've read several books lately that have just, they've really educated me, more than I wanted to know, actually. The one that I'm currently reading is Whitewash, The Story of a Weed Killer, Cancer, and the Corruption of Science. It's by, Carrie Gillum. I think it's a must read for everybody that cares about their health. The other book that I finished recently is Big Chicken. Talks about factory farming. And we all recognize that factory farming impacts our health, and everybody knows about it, but this tells you how it started. It tells you how it's a disgusting thing that happened to these animals, particularly chickens, and how they were treated. It broke my heart reading this book. The other book that I finished recently is The Meat Racket, which talks about the beef industry. And before that, I read The Tylenol Mafia. And those four books have educated me much more so that I can relate to other things. Now, I recently was listening to a radio program, and somebody said, oh, we are living, we are experiencing, still experiencing the Manhattan Project, which is total rubbish. What we are living in now, I believe, is the Phoenix Program. And there was a book written by Douglas Valentine. Fabulous gentleman, fabulous writer, fabulous researcher. And he wrote this book, The Phoenix Program, for the first time ever, a shattering account of the most ambitious and closely guarded operation of the Vietnam War. And if you read that and find out about all of the defoliation that they did in Vietnam and the consequences of that behavior on the Vietnamese health and the veterans, the U.S. military, and not only the U.S. military, but their children. And I have interviewed some of the children who still suffer from the health consequences of something that happened to their father because of Agent Orange. And Monsanto actually participated, and I think it's very interesting when you're reading about what happened in Vietnam, that they had what is called Operation Ranch Hand, which when I was looking at the situation with Agent Orange and Operation Ranch Hand, now Monsanto did have something to do with Operation Ranch Hand, and they typically named their products after ranching and to give it kind of a masculine appeal. And then you have to look at Roundup and Operation Ranch Hand, and that really hit me. Now, Agent Orange was developed by Monsanto, and it was developed because the government asked them to develop this. And what it did was that they sprayed this Agent Orange with all of the horrid ingredients in it throughout the country, and it defoliated plants. And it was just a horrific thing, a terrible thing. It was biological warfare. And I believe, now I don't know that it's deliberate, but you have to wonder. You really do have to wonder. And that's why I suggest that perhaps we are still living in the Phoenix program because of the use of what is called glyphosate, which is in Roundup. And Roundup was introduced, according to my timeline, and this is very interesting, I think. It was introduced to the public in 1974. It was introduced to the consumer market. It was the same time that the American Pediatric Association formed a task force to assess the importance of pharmaceutical support. It was also the time that Eli Lilly stopped the production of vaccines. It was also the same year of the creation of fluoxetine by a scientist at Eli Lilly. And the very next year, in 1975, Henry Gadsden, who was in charge of Merck, said that he wanted Merck to be able to sell to everyone. And in 1977, you have Jonas Salk admitted that the mass polio vaccinations caused most of the cases of polio since 1961. Now, there were just so many things. If you go over this timeline, it's just amazing. And then you go back to 1970. Now let's go back to, oh goodness, I did a program last Saturday about aspartame, and Dr. Betty Martini was my guest. And in 1965, a chemist at Sirley Company accidentally discovered aspartame, which the Pentagon listed as a prospective biochemical warfare weapon. 1965. In 1967, 7 monkeys fed aspartame with milk, 1 dies, 5 have grand mal seizures. In 1968, the CDC in January approved of the drug maker's use of thimerosal in vaccines. Now, thimerosal is mercury. Mercury. There's 2 kinds of mercury, ethyl mercury and methyl mercury. And thimerosal was introduced into the vaccine schedule, into vaccines in 1968. Then in 1971, Dr. John Olney finds that aspartame causes holes in the brains of infant mice. The FDA quality control official expressed concern about the mercury in vaccines. This is all in 1971. There began to be an increase in lawsuits against drug firms due to the DTP vaccine injuries. And so pretty soon you have a situation where the government now the government adds 75 cents to each vaccine. In other words, if a child goes into a doctor's office and they receive 6 vaccines in one day, then that's 75 cents per each vaccine. And that goes into a fund so that you can no longer bring a lawsuit against a drug company for vaccine damages. They have a vaccine court, and so you have to appeal if your child dies or is ill or injured. You have to appeal to the vaccine court. And since vaccines are the standard of care, then the standard of care, if you go into a doctor and they give you a medicine that is the standard of care, in other words, it's part of the algorithm, there's an algorithm. If you go in with certain symptoms, you tell your doctor what the symptoms are, they follow the standard of care, they give you what the American Medical Association says is good, what the hospitals say is good, and what the pharmaceutical industry says is good. And if a doctor obeys the standard of care, you cannot sue that doctor for damages. So when you go back to 1847 and you realize that this all started then, that the American Medical Association is a private, secretive organization. It is a labor union that protects doctors from lawsuits. It's very difficult to sue a doctor if they are obedient to the standard of care. So anyway, getting back to the thimerosal, the mercury in vaccines, and the aspartame situation. Remember that it was a poison. It was a prospective biochemical warfare weapon. But the government approved it as a sweetener because they accidentally discovered that, oh my gosh, this stuff is sweeter than sugar. It's sweeter than anything. I don't know how they discovered that, but they discovered it. And so in 19, let's see, when did they, I'm looking my timeline, and please feel free to go on to look at the timeline. But by by the time that that Reagan came on board, and then you have Rumsfeld, who decided he worked for Cyril and Company, the people that produced aspartame, and he said what he did was he called in his markers. He got it through. He got it past the CDC. What they did was that they loaded the group that was supposed to decide on whether to approve of this poison for the American people. They loaded that group of people with pro aspartame advocates. And so on October 15th, 1981, the FDA announces that Cirilli has filed a petition that aspartame be approved as a sweetener in carbonated beverages and other liquids, just for those things. But pretty soon, you had aspartame in so many other things. In fact, if you look at the label that says artificial sweetener or artificial flavor or natural flavor or something like that, it just might be aspartame, because now it is in thousands of medications. It is in over-the-counter medications. It is in dairy products. It is in children's infant formula. It is in just so many things. And you think people think that because the FDA has approved of something that it's safe. Now, there's a couple of wonderful videos that people can look at. They can watch Sweet Misery, A Poisoned World, and I have links to both videos in my timeline. And the other one is Sweet Remedy, The World Reacts. Now, I have a cough. I've had it for quite some time, and I treat it, and sometimes it gets better. But one of the things that I was using, using for a couple of years, and I'm so upset about this, because I just found out through Dr. Martini, because she had association with the Ricola people, the people who produce Ricola. And on the package it says, Ricola, the original natural herb cough drops. And on the back, and it's from Switzerland, and on the back it says, Ricola original natural herb cough drops are made today as they were in 1930. Okay, so I felt pretty safe in using this, because I'm very careful about what I eat. I don't take any over-the-counter medications. I don't take Tylenol. I take nothing. Nothing over-the-counter. And I threw all that stuff away. I try to use all natural things. I buy organic, supposedly organic food. I get my meat from an Amish farmer. I belong to a co-op. I get natural everything. And so I assumed that because this package says that they are made today as they were in 1930, I felt pretty safe until last week, when I discovered that these cough drops that were supposedly the exact same thing as they made in 1930 has aspartame.
That's amazing.
I was really upset. So people, please, please look at what you're ingesting, whether it's a medication, whether it's a dairy product, whatever it is, then you really have to look and see what is in the products that you're consuming. And So all 1974, the 1970s were really very influential in agriculture. In 1980, autism appeared in the DSM for the very, very first time.
What is that? That's a DSM.
Diagnostical Statistical Manual. It's where people look for a diagnosis or a what to prescribe for the symptoms or what a disease is according to this manual. And when it first came out, it was very small, and it's usually used by psychiatrists. And the one that's it's put out by the American Psychiatric Association, and right now they're up to DSM-5, and it's called the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. So, getting back to the timeline, the very first time that this mental disorder was in the DSM was in 1980. And keep in mind, go ahead.
I was just going to say, do we know when autism first appeared? I mean, not just in the manual, but is that actually when autism first appeared as well, 1980, or was that just when the manual recognized autism?
Actually, it was in the 40s, and I talk about this in my book, Screening Sandy Hook. It was in the 40s, and it was because of the mercury that was used in the building trade.
Interesting. Because, yeah, so we can really link autism all the way through to mercury. And the fact that, I mean, it's like dementia as well. We never had these sort of things on a case that we get today. You know, it's so prevalent today, and autism's so prevalent. And isn't it interesting how it correlates with when mercury was introduced into the vaccines? And then, of course, you mentioned the 1940s with autism, and that was with mercury in the building trade.
Right. And the other thing that contributes to dementia, Alzheimer's, of course, aluminum. Aluminum is a big thing. And when you look at the amount of aluminum in our world, in our society, people should not be cooking with aluminum. I got rid of all my aluminum cookware some time back. You shouldn't be using aluminum foil. You shouldn't be using aluminum anything. But keep in mind, too, that soda pop comes in aluminum cans. And if you drink soda pop, and especially soda pop that is sweetened with aspartame, that's a double whammy. And so, anyway, yes. So, autism appeared for the first time, and let's see what else happened. The APA added ADHD to the DSM in 1980 also. And it goes back, and I think it can go back to the addition of mercury in vaccines.
Yes.
Which they approved of in 1968. The CDC approved of the drug maker's use of thimerosal, mercury, in vaccines, 1968. And by 1980, you have autism and you have ADHD in the DSM.
It's really, really interesting, Deanna, because as I say, these increases in things like autism, and so many people are being diagnosed with it, and it's just all swept under the carpet. And something else I heard Betty Martini say on a show the other day was how they're trying to remove aspartame from the ingredients on products, I think primarily in Canada. Go ahead.
Yes, absolutely, in Canada. But they're doing that. They've done that in this country, obviously, because now what they call it is natural flavors. So that you don't know, if something says natural flavors on it, you better find out what that natural flavor is. Even if you have to contact the company and you ask them specifically, which I did. I called Ricola, I went to their website, they skirted around the issue. And the problem is, too, that the Ricola company knew 10 years ago, that aspartame was dangerous. But they added it to their cough drops anyway.
Yeah, you know, they're just criminals, they really are. I mean, people don't want to use aspartame, so the next thing is, oh, okay, if they don't want to use it, what we'll do is we'll remove it from the ingredients, we'll hide it as something else. I mean, the sort of minds that come up with this type of nonsense, you really have to think, you made a comment earlier about, you know, this does seem to be planned, satanic, pure evil. That's all I can really say it is.
Right. And the interesting thing about this, too, is that it isn't just what we're ingesting, but it's also what is in the environment. And so I want to get back to this glyphosate issue and this book that I was telling you about, Whitewash, The Story of a Weed Killer, Cancer, and the Corruption of Science. Now, the CDC, the FDA, the Department of Agriculture are more inclined to favor the corporations than they are to protect the people they're supposed to be protecting. And there's a revolving door between the corporations and the leadership of the FDA, the CDC, the Environmental Protection Agency, which should be protecting the people. But when you have somebody that works for Monsanto and then they're put in a position at the Environmental Protection Agency, there are a lot of wonderful scientists that work in those agencies, especially the EPA. There are a lot of good scientists, but it's people at the top that call the shots. And in this book, Whitewash, The Story of a Weed Killer, Cancer, and the Corruption of Science, people who depend on their paycheck are likely to go along and not speak out and not be a whistleblower because they've seen other people who have done that and have suffered retaliation. This book, I think, is probably one of the most important books that I've read in a long time. I'm so mad from reading this book. Farming used to be that a farmer would rotate his crops and they would plant things that was good for the soil. Now, Roundup and Roundup Ready crops they're a disaster for the soil. They're also, because people have overused Roundup. The farmers overuse Roundup and it gets sprayed on wheat a couple of weeks before the harvest because it dries it out. And that goes into the American diet. And so, people have glyphosate in their body, residual glyphosate in their body. And, they spray this stuff all over. There are some, South American countries who have adopted the Monsanto, premise that we'll get you a better harvest and you don't have to pull weeds and you don't have to do that. You don't have to put all this work in. And so what they were doing down in some South American countries, rather than spray it closer to the ground, they would just spray it from an airplane all over. Everybody was sprayed with Roundup, with glyphosate.
Could that look like chemtrails or contrails, do you think?
I think it could. I know that there are a lot of people who are very interested in chemtrails. And I've taken pictures of chemtrails. I have photos of chemtrails on my website. But I think that we better start concentrating on what is sprayed on our food and what is sprayed on all of the parks. All of the public lands are using Roundup so that they don't, so that they can control weeds. And so if you walk your dog in the park, your dog probably will get sick. The other thing that you have to think about too is the mosquito abatement programs, which are all over in the summer. Now, if it's going to kill mosquitoes, it's going to kill bees, it's going to kill a whole bunch of other things. And we used to see a lot of monarch butterflies. Well, we don't see those anymore. And one of their favorite things to eat is milkweed. Well, glyphosate, Roundup, and there's other things in Roundup besides glyphosate, but that's the main one that people know about, is killing all the milkweed. So there's been a serious reduction of something like 60% in monarch butterflies. And they are also, they go from flower to flower, and they're pollinators. There's been a serious reduction in the amount of bees. And they also pollinate. And it's just Monsanto and their products. And it's not just Monsanto. There are probably 600 other companies that also provide herbicides and all kinds of other things, weed killers. And it's destroying the soil, absolutely destroying the soil so that nothing will grow.
Another thing I heard a presenter, just jumping quickly, Jeff Rentz actually said this a lot during the summer last year, and he said he's not cleaning any bugs off his windscreen. Now, I live in the UK, and I don't have a car, but my mother does. And notice the same thing with her. You used to always be cleaning the bugs off the windscreen, having to wash them separately before you even wash the car, you know, more frequently than you would wash your vehicle, you know. And so that, I wanted to bring that up because it's not just in America, it's in the UK too, where we've seen all this die-off of bugs, you know.
Right. And Monsanto, they make something like $85 billion a year, and they're poisoning the earth. It is, and particularly in the Americas, it is so pervasive. And of course in European countries. And some of them are beginning to realize what has happened. And there's also the resistant weeds that are worse than, they can grow 8 feet tall. And they destroy tractors. It's just a very, very serious problem. And the CDC, the Environmental Protection Agency, more than any other government agency, is responsible for allowing Monsanto and these other companies to take control of what we eat. Oh, it's amazing. I'm so upset by this book. And And what has happened, it's just awful. It's just terrible what has happened. And they're not going to be able to get this back. It's going to take work, and it's going to take farmers who have depended on Roundup and Roundup Ready crops, because with a Roundup Ready crop, it's a genetically modified organism. It's a genetically modified so that people could, so that the farmers can spray everything. It used to be that they could, that, it would kill regular plants if you sprayed this stuff. However, with Roundup Ready crops, they're genetically modified to accept this, the Roundup, and that's so. So you have genetically modified crops, which are also really awful. There's also something that's happened to the Florida orange growers, who have lost, oh my gosh, the amount of acreage that they have lost is amazing. And it's not that the rancher, the farmers spray Roundup on the trees. They spray it on the ground where the trees are. And let me just look this up here. The lemon, avocado, orange trees. Let's see. And this happens in both California and in, Florida. Let me give you some figures here. It's really terrible. Really bad. Orange groves. Okay. So what they're doing is Florida citrus crop. What is happening is that there's a disease. It's called citrus greening. And the farmers have lost, they've gone from, let's see, as many as 69 million citrus trees in nearly all the state's groves have been infected in Florida. 69 million citrus trees. And Florida's orange production was 242 million boxes in 2003, 2004, and in the 2015-16 season, it was down to 81 million because of Roundup. And they didn't spray the trees. They sprayed the weeds on the ground so it would make it easy to harvest. So now, because the Roundup in the ground has destroyed millions of trees, 69 million citrus trees just in Florida. And what happens is that it causes the trees to produce green, disfigured, and bitter fruit. Isn't that amazing?
It is. And what does this... while you've been presenting this, Deanna, I tried to look up glyphosate, because you said you've got this build-up of residual glyphosate in your body, and I wonder right. what that actually did. And there's an article, glyphosate toxicity to humans, an overview from naturalnews.com. But it it says about it goes through the where are we? It stays in the bone, it passes through the guts, gets in the bone, stuff like that, sinks into human organs and accumulates, creating a toxic environment for the human body. But it doesn't actually say what are the symptoms of this. So if someone wanted to work out if they actually had glyphosate poisoning, how would this manifest?
Alzheimer's.
Right, that's very interesting then, because that's what we've had an increase in since the 1980s.
And it also causes a lot of neurological damage, particularly for children. And think of all, think of what children eat. They eat cereals. They eat snacks made from things that are sprayed with glyphosate. And children are extremely vulnerable. And so they have neurological damage. You have birth defects. You have low sperm count, so that people cannot reproduce. But cancer. Cancer is a big thing. Non-Hodgkin's lymphoma is a big thing that the ranchers have suffered from, because they're out there spraying this stuff, and they're going to suffer the consequences.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, what just to let you know, because you've got your timeline there. We've got just under 10 minutes left, so I'll hand back to you.
Oh my goodness.
We've been getting through it today, but a very, very interesting topic, and it's not one that I've really covered on the show, so thank you so much for presenting this information. I'll hand back to you. Anything else you want to throw in for the remaining period of time?
Well, I think that I invite people to look at the timeline. I added a few things this morning and yesterday. But just the fact that, okay, in 1985, the FDA considered accepting clinical trials conducted in other countries. So when you are taking a prescription drug and you think that, oh, this has been tested and it's fine and it's wonderful, well, it may have only been tested on a few people. For instance, Prozac. Prozac was introduced on December 29th, 1987. The FDA approved Prozac for treating depression. Only 287 people were in the clinical trial. And the clinical trial was pretty much staged. They disqualified anybody that might have had a problem taking the drug during the clinical trial. And they did have suicides during the clinical trial, which I do talk about in my book. So you don't know when you're taking a drug, how many people actually, how was it tested? Where was it tested? Because if things are tested in other countries, people will sign up to, for instance, in a very poor country, they might sign up to have a test done. And these corporations don't care how many people they kill. And in 1990, you had Congress declaring on January 1st, Congress designated, excuse me, the beginning of the decade of the brain. And on March 26th, Newsweek's cover, Prozac, a breakthrough drug for depression. The New York Times, 3 days later, science writer promotes Prozac. On July 17th in 1999, President Bush announces and confirms the decade of the brain. And when you look at all the stuff that happened in the 1990s, with children being diagnosed as with ADHD and Ritalin being used, and you wonder, gosh, what's happened to our children? What's happening to us? We're being poisoned both by prescription drugs and by the foods that we eat. My gosh. And these people like Monsanto, the money that they are making, and they are only interested in the bottom line. They do not care about people's health. They are out for the money. And that is pretty sad, because the people, the citizens who think they are protected by these ABC agencies of the government, No, those agencies were set up long time ago. Some of them as far back as 1906. They were set up to protect industry. Get it through your head. Those ABC agencies do not protect the people. They protect the profits of the corporations that they serve. And it's pretty sad. And there have been some lawsuits. And the other thing too, that these companies do is that they have enough money that they can, get so-called experts from universities to write favorable reviews of their products. And so it really influences people. And it's pretty bad. But there's a connection, a definite connection between disease and glyphosate-based Roundup. And they are intentionally misleading people, and they say that Roundup is safe, that it's harmless, that you could drink it. Baloney. Baloney. Monsanto falsified data. In fact, the EPA and the FDA accept the test that the corporations make for approval. In other words, a company will say, okay, we've tested Prozac and it does this, this, and this. And the FDA will say, oh, okay, you have our approval. These should be tested independently by objective scientists, not by Monsanto's own scientist. Oh, this makes me so mad.
Yes.
We really do need to be careful.
Well, it's very difficult to know how to be, because like you say, it can get in the food chain at any level. And even I've heard situations of, an organic field being next to a GMO field. And of course, all the pollen blows from one into the other. And so even when
right.
you are careful.
There have been lawsuits about that, where the wind will shift and pretty soon you have glyphosate Roundup killing the farmer next door, killing their crops. It's really a terrible thing. And people need to wake up. They need to read. They need to study this issue and so they can make choices. That's what this is all about. Making choices to protect yourself, because the ABC agencies aren't doing that. You have to take personal responsibility and realize, yes, we are living in the Phoenix program. They tried it in Vietnam. They saw what it did. And now they're doing it all over. In as many countries as they can. Now, there's been some fighting against in the animal industry, in the factory farming. People have come to realize that this isn't good for people, because the factory farming, they use more antibiotics in factory farms than people do. So if you are antibiotic free, if you never take antibiotics, but you eat beef or pork or chicken from factory farm, you're going to get antibiotics. And there's also antibiotic resistant diseases because of the overuse of antibiotics. Now, you would not give your child every day. You would not give your child an antibiotic every day. You only give it an antibiotic when the child is sick, if you choose to go that way, which I wouldn't, but if you choose to go that way. But in factory farming, every animal gets an antibiotic every day, preemptively. but you wouldn't do that to a human being. And they initially started doing this because it made bigger chickens. It grew them bigger, and the companies made more money, particularly Tyson. And then you have to look at his association with the Clintons. So that's another great book, Big Chicken. Wonderful. Well, it's a very revealing book. But read some of these books and educate yourself. So
before you go, Deanna, can you just give the names and the authors of the books that you recommend, please?
Yes. Whitewash, The Story of a Weed Killer, Cancer, and the Corruption of Science. This book is a must-read. Absolutely a must-read. It's written by Carrie Gillam. G-I-L-L-A-M. The other book, Big Chicken, was written by McKenna, and these are all available at Amazon that I have a love-hate relationship with. The Meat Racket, very good book, and it was written by... Hang on here. It was written by Christopher Leonard, and it's The Secret Takeover of America's Food Business. A great book. And the other book, The Tylenol Mafia, not so much, but it does show how things can enter into the chain of what you're taking. And whether it's Tylenol, whether it's whatever it is, I'm sure people remember about the Tylenol that killed several people. And so it was a very interesting book, and I enjoyed reading it. And but the ones that I recommend: The Meat Racket, Whitewash, Big Chicken.
That will keep you
really busy, and it will make you really mad.
Well, thank you very much, Deanna. And folks, don't forget that Deanna will be back on the radio in 5 hours at 4 p.m. Eastern. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, and you can listen live there. Alternatively, if you're not available at that time, then maybe tomorrow go to spingolaspeaks.net, and you'll be able to download the archive of that show there and all our previous shows. And her website as well is spingola.com. I will be including a link to this timeline in the post for this show, so be sure to check it out. I want to thank Deanna for joining me today. I want to thank you all for listening. I'll be back with you all tomorrow, and bye for now.
You have been listening to the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show on the Eurofolk Radio Network. Andrew's book, The Synagogue of Satan, is now available on his website, andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com, in an updated, expanded, and uncensored edition.